in your body. Millie, you have control, but lack the force of will to fully access your mana. Ironically, each of you possesses the solution to the other. Now, he said as he pulled his sleeves up, copy my movements exactly. I'll be showing you both the best way to solve your individual weaknesses. The reunion of the royal family was warm and tearful. Upon setting their eyes on their eldest brother, both Helen and Shiva broke into tears and tackled James in a heartfelt hug. Even Ken couldn't help but shed a few tears as he took his brother's hand and pulled him into a hug. While Prince James did not cry, his gaunt and tired face broke into a smile that reflected a joy he had not felt for a long time. Fiora quietly dismissed herself from the family reunion and closed the door behind her. Sighing, she exited James's estate with a reluctant feeling of sympathetic joy.
Thank you, Alfred said as he walked over to Fiora. Prince James hasn't been this happy since before Marcus perished. The royal family has lost half their members. It is good they did not lose more.
Fiora fixed Alfred with a glare. I did my duty, nothing more and nothing less. I, as a loyal citizen of Durin, hold the royal family in the highest esteem, no matter what feud I may have with an individual member. Alfred sighed and offered his arm.
Fiora, will you accompany me for a moment?
Fiora frowned, but took his arm and allowed Alfred to lead her into the courtyard. Due to the rushed construction, the gardens in the courtyard still possessed the look of a freshly planted garden. Alfred bent down and smelled one of the daisies.
Beautiful, is it not? Alfred asked calmly as he fingered the flower. No matter where this flower goes, so long as it remains alive, it will be beautiful.
Please get to the point, Alfred, Fiora demanded with her arms crossed. You did not ask me here to discuss gardening.
Alfred sighed again. With the fall of Durin, the royal family has fallen into a state of imminent distress. Tell me, have you ever heard of a king without a throne? Could a prince ascend to his inheritance if he possesses no one to crown him and no throne to sit upon?
Fiora said nothing, but her eyes did waver for a moment. Alfred noted it and continued.
With the current situation, it can be said that there is little left to lose. We've all lost almost everything, our homes, livelihood, safety, and even our country. We are surrounded by enemies, and our resources are stretched thin as it is. The people need someone to guide them, to keep them feeling safe, to keep them calm. Do you not agree that our prince can provide this sense of security?
He does he not? Fiora pointed out to Alfred with a raised eyebrow. Wouldn't the knowledge of our prince's safety be enough?
Prince James is indeed a shining light in the dark, Alfred assessed. His mere presence shines the light of hope on all the peasants who live here. However, light can go dark, and my prince is so limited in what he can accomplish right now.
Does your prince know he's limited? Fiora asked sarcastically. Is he aware of your current views of his abilities? Alfred chuckled.
I would never trouble the prince with my thoughts. I was born unworthy, like you, and it was only by his grace that I was raised up from the gutter. I am not like you. You who has risen due to your own ability and luck. My very existence is devoted to repaying the prince for his kindness and generosity.
Really? Fiora's voice dripped with anger. To say we were both born to be unworthy? I never would have imagined hearing those words from Alfred the Brain. When you led our group, weren't you the one who said we were destined for greater things? Isn't that what you and the others said to me when you abandoned me? You claim that your goal is to raise up the prince, but doesn't that also better your own position?
Come now, Fiora, Alfred chuckled. Surely you don't hold the same enmity for me as you do the Empire. I and the others were forced to choose between backing you or siding with the prince. It was a petty children's squabble.
Petty for you, perhaps, Fiora countered. But while all of you were adopted to serve James in the castle, I was kicked out of the orphanage and forced to live on the streets until I could join the army. All for a stupid children's squabble, as you call it, over a stolen piece of gold I never touched.
Alfred shook his head. Prince James regrets that poor decision more than you realize, Fiora. Fine, I won't try to change your mind anymore.
He cleared his throat.
As you are aware, Durin has fallen, and because of this, my future king no longer holds the proper authority to be named as such. This land was granted to the Adventurers Guild by the former king, but it remains under the ownership of the royal family. Naturally, declaring this truth would be terribly awkward for my prince. However, you are close to the guildmaster and famous within the town. If you offered your support for Prince James's ascension and subsequent acquisition of this territory...
Fiora didn't hesitate as she drew her sword at lightning speed and held it to Alfred's throat. Alfred pleasantly smiled at her, not bothering to look down at the sword at his throat.
"Careful," he said softly. "I wouldn't do anything else, otherwise it may become unpleasant for you."
Fiora casually moved her eyes to examine the two bodyguards who had materialized out of thin air and were currently holding their swords at her throat. "Shadow guards of the king," she reasoned. "I see the surviving members of the king's guard have arrived from the convoy. Or maybe they have been here longer." She withdrew her sword, and the guards disappeared. "You want me to help organize a coup to place James as the ruling leader of this town?" Fiora stated bluntly. "A coup now, of all times? Are you insane? We can't afford a blasted civil war while in the middle of an invasion."
Alfred frowned and rubbed his throat. "That sounds rather unpleasant. I merely wish to enlist your aid in establishing the true ruler of this territory. Think about it. There are no other royal families in Nahatra. If we survive this challenge, then Prince King James could become the de facto leader of the entire country. He would be incredibly grateful to everyone who helped him."
"And if he became king, you would be the king's top advisor, right?" Fiora snarled, whispering your every wish into his ears. "Well, with full intention to ruin your plan, the legal agreement between the guild and the kingdom was the sale of this land to the Adventurers Guild on the condition of taxes being paid to the city of Durin. With its destruction, this land is now the rightful property of the guild, not your prince."
Alfred narrowed his eyes. "I see. You have no intention to offer your help with this."
Fiora quickly braced, taking a stance as she noticed growing shadows from the flowers. "Going to silence me now, Alfred? I dare you to try."
Alfred glared for a moment, before smiling and bowing. "Why, Fiora," he said graciously, "I would never dream of harming one of the heroes. How very preposterous. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must meet with the gardeners. A few weeds seem to have been mixed in with the flowers."
Alfred waved his hand, dismissing her. Fiora, her eyes still on the shadows, gave a two-fingered salute and left the courtyard. When she was gone, Alfred's face turned sour as he crushed the flower he was holding in his hand. From the shadows, a smiling Annabelle and a frowning Josh emerged.
"That didn't go according to plan," Josh observed. I already told you. I tried to persuade her when we were together in the convoy, and she refused.
His mouth twitching, Alfred released the crushed flower from his fist and watched it fall to the ground.
I had thought she'd be wise enough to see what the future will be, what her future success could be. She appears to be as stubborn as ever. Curse her.
Annabelle giggled and wound her arms around Alfred.
My love, you shouldn't get yourself so worked up. It's bad for your health. Don't let the fiery-haired succubus anger you so. Isn't she nothing in your eyes?
Alfred visibly relaxed at Annabelle's words.
Thank you, my dear, for reminding me. You're right. She was nothing then and nothing now. While my plan would have been easier with her help, it won't be hurt by her opposition. Josh, do you understand what you have to do?
His face full of reluctance, Josh nodded.
Yeah, I understand. I'll have the Shadow Guard keep an eye on her. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Alfred waited until Josh was gone before pulling Annabelle off his shoulder.
All right. You, my dear, need to keep an eye on Josh. Make sure his guilt and small conscience don't interfere. I have a plan for this country, and no one will get in my way.
Chapter 7
I have the power, Doc proclaimed.
Too loud, Claire said, moaning in pain.
The purple-clothed pixie was still nursing a heavy headache and was currently using her chair slime as a bed. She had covered her face with a cold cloth and was massaging her head.
My bad, Doc apologized. Your hangover isn't getting better yet?
Doc, no talking in head anymore. Too much,
she murmured, forcing her body inside the chair slime. She cooed as the cool slime enveloped her body.
Mama is really out of it, the twins observed. She normally hates being covered in slime.
Remind me again, but why are you girls okay when compared to Claire? Doc asked them.
Aisha raised a paw.
After dying from drinking too much alcohol, our bodies were reformed without the after effects of overdrinking. At least, that was what Mommy said before complaining about the unfairness of life.
Isla raised her paw now.
New body, no alcohol, no pain. Unfair, so unfair,
Claire mumbled from within her slimy prison.
So, dying isn't enough to warrant avoiding pain? I guess I'll have to remember that,
Doc mused to himself.
Anyway, Rowan seems to be learning a lot lately. It's too bad my crystal body can't copy his meditation or any of the magic involved.
We can't either, Papa,
Isla sighed.
Without our monster cores, it is not possible to increase our power through normal means. Even our bodies are stuck in a permanent state that doesn't grow stronger or weaker. Only you can increase our powers now.
My lord,
Anodyne spoke up from the ceiling.
While I am in the same situation as the twins, may I offer an observation? Your slimes are dungeon monsters that possess the ability to evolve and improve themselves. Unlike us bosses, perhaps one of your slimes could use this meditation ability.
Doc considered Anodyne's suggestion.
It can't hurt to try, he decided. Should I make all the slimes try meditating?
No,
Claire groaned from the slime.
Explosions. That seems like a valid point,
Aisha said, recalling the many, many times Doc had made slimes explode.
How about you use a magic slime, Papa? They already use magic, so they would be less likely to explode.
Doc summoned a magic slime onto the heart room floor. Claire quickly directed her chair slime to move her to a safe distance.
Mage slime, meditate, Doc ordered.
They all watched the slime. It wiggled and jiggled and shook, but nothing happened. Slightly frustrated, Doc directed the mage slime to jump into the air and meditate. It obeyed, and promptly splattered.
My lord, look!
Anodyne called out in excitement.
It splashed!
But nothing happened, Doc complained.
Papa, maybe control it directly instead of directing it?
The twins advised. Good idea, Doc said, as his consciousness flowed into the slime. Once inside, Doc concentrated and began controlling the mana within his slime body. Using what he learned from observing Rowan's meditation practice, Doc began to circulate the slime's mana, forming a vortex within the slime. As the mana circled his core, he felt it begin to draw on the external mana from the surroundings. Magic light began to appear around the slime, and it slowly changed into a vortex of mana entering its body.
It's happening, Doc said joyfully.
As expected, the slime exploded.
Ah, Doc whined. It went boom again.
Claire peeked out from behind her chair slime.
Well, that is to be expected by now. At least I'm still clean this time. Oh, the noise made my headache worse.
Doc sighed as his mind returned to his body.
I guess using a human's meditation technique in a slime's body is worthless.
Maybe not. Ow,
Claire said as she rubbed her head.
Your magic slime was doing it right, I think. Maybe you just need to practice more to modify the technique for slime use. It certainly wouldn't hurt.
I guess, Doc said noncommittally. Hey, Claire, you mind moving your slime away from my crystal? It kinda makes me nervous.
Claire's chair slime had squirmed under Doc's crystal and was moving in a small circle beneath, devouring the leftover pieces of exploded slime.
Sorry, Doc, Claire stated, directing the slime to move away. You know how these slimes get with food. I think I'm going to take another nap to try to lose this headache.
Good luck,
Doc called out as Claire zoomed into her home. Sighing, Doc turned his attention back to the dungeon. Gretany watched as the pixie left and the dungeon lost interest. When it was sure they were no longer paying attention, it slid carefully up the wall and into Claire's tunnels. Being only large enough to hold a pixie, the rogue slime knew that the dungeon would not be paying any real attention to the paths, as they were technically outside the main dungeon body. Gretany followed the tunnels until it came to a patch with loose dirt above, a sign that dungeon magic was not present. It reached up and used its slime tentacles to remove the soil without eating it, revealing a hole into a small room. This was Gretany's secret home, a place not part of the dungeon where it could think of plans on its own. It had made the base following its discovery of the pixie tunnels.
Thinking time, Gretany said, settling itself. Easier to think now. Perhaps I should eat more heads.
Gretany had learned that eating adventurer heads would increase its intelligence, but if it went too long without eating heads, it would begin to grow dumber again. With a flick of a tentacle, a head rolled out from its secret trove in the wall. Gretany munched on the head and let it dissolve within him.
Better now, much better, Gretany said in satisfaction. It is becoming harder to get heads. Fewer adventurers are coming in, and the pixie is using me more often. I need to find more heads.
Nodding its slime body, Gretany left the base, making sure to use its slime to patch the soil over the entrance. It zoomed down the tunnel until it reached a fork. Gretany paused to feel the vibrations from each path. The path on the right was sending out vibrations from wind, but nothing else. The path on the left held the sound of voices. Gretany followed the left path. After some time, Gretany found what it was looking for, the secret dungeon tunnel into town. The dungeon had previously created several underground tunnels that led into various parts of the town. It had used one to retrieve an odd body. Gretany had managed to steal a piece before the infernal slimes absorbed it. It hadn't tasted special, nor had it granted any new abilities to him. Gretany shook its head as distraction started to set in.
One head wasn't enough,
it thought to itself. I need more to last longer. I need more heads. Gretany extended a tentacle into the air to check the surroundings. The tentacle sensed the sun was gone, and Gretany followed it out into the free air. It paused to feel the wind on its slime, searching for the sounds of prey. The dungeon entrance was hidden in an alley between two large objects, buildings, as it had learned they were called. The area was normally busy when the sun was out, but less so when the sun was gone. Gretany attached itself to the wall and crawled up the large object to the top. There, it stopped moving and listened. It felt the vibrations from the ground travel up the object and into its slime, giving Gretany a clear picture of the world around it. An adventurer was walking toward the space between the two buildings. Gretany moved to the edge of the building roof. When the adventurer was almost under it, Gretany let go and fell. As it moved downwards, Gretany allowed its body to grow to half of its normal overslime's body size. The resulting increase in the slime's bulk smashed the adventurer into the ground, provoking a loud cry from the adventurer. Knowing the cry would attract attention and bring trouble, Gretany quickly removed and devoured the head. It then disappeared back into the hidden dungeon entrance, taking the time to use its slime to pick up dirt and cautiously cover the pixie-sized hole. As Gretany left, it heard the screams of other adventurers, having apparently found the body. Gretany scratched a mark into the wall as a reminder to avoid using this entrance until the adventurer stopped looking. After all, Gretany would always need more heads. Chapter 8.
All right, I officially call to order the town meeting, Mary announced.
The guildmaster stood at the head of the table being used for the council's purposes.
Allow me to begin, Mary said. I am Guildmaster Mary, and the representative of the Adventurers Guild.
To her left, James sat with a blank look on his face. Alfred, who was standing behind the prince, gently touched James's shoulders. James shook his head and stood up. He bowed. Prince James of the Royal Family of Durin, he said. To Mary's right, a surly-looking old man also bowed.
Sir Orso, head of the Temple Knights and standing in proxy to Priest Horus.
The voices continued down the table. Enchanter Stevens, Witch Helen, Alchemist Forcus, Representative Gran of the Elves, and the newly appointed head of the merchants, Grecian. Nodding her head, Mary continued.
Thank you for coming, everyone. As you are all aware, this council was formed due to the crisis facing this country. Our people are scared, and we need leaders such as you to help maintain the calm necessary to fight against our enemies. So, once again, I thank you all for coming.
The royal family lends its support to this council in facing the days ahead, Prince James said resolutely.
Sir Orso spoke up next.
Priest Horus was unable to come due to the obligations of our faith, but he wanted me to convey the Church's full support to you, Master Mary. We are committed to overcoming this challenge.
We enchanters also pledge our support, Enchanter Stevens announced. The enchanting rivalry between my friends Helen and Forcus has been set aside in light of recent events.
Helen and Forcus bowed their heads in agreement.
The elves stand with the town, Gran said elegantly. We will do all we can to assist.
The merchants I represent are of the same mind. However, I must beg your forgiveness, Master Mary, as I must bring forth our first topic of crisis, Grecian said quickly.
I understand. What is the matter? Mary asked.
Grecian stood.
Fellow council members, as you all know, I have been chosen to lead the Merchants Guild within this town. As such, there are several problems that must be discussed at once. The food supply, the value of currency, and people's faith. Each problem is related to the others.
Using a magic orb brought forth from his robe pocket, Grecian summoned up an image of several stores in the town.
Due to the current crisis, we have been cut off from the farmlands and imports that previously kept this town supplied with food. Because of this, the current stores will only be able to keep prices low for about a month before we are forced to raise them to deal with the declining stockpile. While this is the most pressing issue, the worst problem facing us is the worth of our Nehatran currency. This announcement brought confused and shocked murmurs to the table.
What are you saying? James spoke up immediately. How could you say such a ridiculous thing? Our country's currency is...
Therein lies the problem, my prince, Grecian interrupted. Our country no longer exists. The coin we have no longer possesses political or financial backing. Right now, even if we survivors managed to escape this predicament, we would all be poor beggars on the streets.
That's utterly outrageous, Alfred bellowed. Do you not see your prince, and soon to be king, sitting right before you? How could you possibly say there is no financial or political backing? Are you trying to cause a panic here, you money-grubbing merchant?
Grecian fixed Alfred with such a glare that the man backed off.
I know what you are thinking. No, I am not acting like the greedy Wendell who betrayed the king. The fact of the matter is that your prince has neither land nor coffers by which to support his currency. Without the non-minted gold of the treasury to serve as collateral, we are destitute.
But, Master Grecian, surely you cannot be saying our bronze, silver, and gold coins are completely worthless, Mary pressed.
Grecian waved his hand, and the images of stores were replaced by the image of a gold coin.
It's not so much the gold that is worthless, he explained, as the coin the gold is made into. Gold, as you are aware, is the best material for creating magic items. Its conductivity of mana is only outmatched by rare materials such as magic silver, better known as mithril, enchanted gold, better known as orichalcum, or magic diamond, better known as adamantium. Because of this, few countries, if any, use pure gold coins. Instead, they opt to cover some other metal with a gold layer. This series of coins is then backed by a larger stockpile of pure gold that can be used as collateral against it. This way, countries can have the choice of mining more gold coins or using their gold to create tools and weapons. To prevent forgeries, each country uses a magic seal to imprint their gold coins with their mark, which can't be replicated without the seal. Now, Grecian continued, with the entire country of Nehatra devastated, the magic stamps used to imprint our currency lie either stolen or destroyed in the ruins of the city-states. Without the gold standard collateral to give the coinage value, the coin is worthless to other countries unless it is melted. The magic stamped into the coin's image cannot be easily melted away, so the gold would cost both time and effort to melt and reprint. In other words, more gold. One of our current coins would cost at least 50 silver to melt down and be remade into another country's currency. Thus, our gold is worth only 50 silver at best to the rest of the world. To make matters even worse, there would be political and economic pressure to reduce that value even further, to the point that our gold would be worth maybe only a single silver. That is not counting the silver coins or bronze coins, which would be little better than waste, since they are also cast over another metal.
Prince James thrummed his fingers on the table.
I see. What of the other problems you mentioned? The value of our currency is disheartening to hear, but surely not a problem at this time.
Grecian inclined his head toward the prince.
As I've said, we as a people only have a limited amount of food brought in from the small farms around town and the provisions brought by the refugees. As ordered by the Adventurers Guild, we merchants purchased all the provisions at a fair price from both the refugees and the elves, and have accounted for at least 3 months' worth of food, 4 at the best. When people realize how much food we have, many will begin to stockpile as much as possible. This will drain our reserves dry. This is why we will be forced to raise the price of food to counter that. This, in turn, will lower the faith of the people within this town. Gods forbid any of them learn the value of our coinage as well. We would be facing riots on the streets if the citizens thought they were poor and soon to be starving. "Grecian, what you say is very troubling," Mary began after a moment of thought. "Ignoring the possibility of invasion, you are saying we have, at best, 3 or 4 months before we all starve. And, if we do escape, we will be worth nothing. Would our allies not give us aid?" Grecian shrugged. "We could rely on the various nobility trying to raise their image by giving us supplies and relief aid. But their interest is always easily distracted by the next interesting thing to do. With the current status quo, however, helping us is not productive. Any accusations against their treatment of us would likely be countered with arguments that their agreements were not with us specifically."
"The church would surely lend you aid, my prince," Orso spoke up. "Our magnanimous assistance is known universally."
Prince James fixed the experienced knight with an irritated gaze, but said nothing. With a slight nod of his head, however, Alfred spoke up.
"Sir Orso, you cannot believe that your church would lend you aid for free. My prince would be completely beholden to your wishes until such time as he repaid your help. Besides, the Church of Nehatra was also destroyed, was it not? That was the only branch of your order open to the worship of every god. Any help we'd receive would be from a monolithic church who would seek to convert us."
Orso coughed awkwardly, but had to nod his head in response. As someone who served the goddess of the forest in an area dominated by the god of the plains, he understood well the thought of religious persecution and conversion. "Though these matters are important," Mary interrupted, "let us think of how to rebuild after we save ourselves. Master Grecian, how would you go about fixing our current problems?" Grecian turned his light imager off and scratched his head. "Our currency issue isn't too big of a problem for the moment," he admitted. "So long as we remain here, the current coinage holds value. A solution and problem can be found at the same source." With that said, he removed a gold coin and placed it on the table. Helen looked over and raised an eyebrow.
"This is a gold coin from the dungeon, is it not? I can sense the residual magic."
"You are correct, Lady Helen," Grecian admitted. "This is indeed a gold coin from the dungeon. However, take a close look at its engraving."
"What are you talking about?" Gran asked curiously. "The coin holds no engraving."
"That is correct. This is one of the gold coins dropped by a dungeon boss or rarely found in a chest. Curiously, it holds no magic engraving, yet is complete gold. It's quite outrageous, given that no one uses solid gold coins. However, what makes this coin so important is not only that it's complete gold, but also that it is free to be engraved by any magic stamp on the continent. In other words, this is the most valuable gold coin in the world." Everyone stared at the gold coin in surprise. "The same applies to the bronze and silver coins in the dungeon," Grecian continued, "which, in the long run, would make us all extremely wealthy, so long as we didn't spend it incorrectly. Imagine trading pure gold coins to a country that each would be minted down into at least 20 gold coins each. We'd be rich beyond compare. We are fortunate in that regard, as only a few dungeons throughout history have had unstamped currency. Wendell knew this and kept it a secret within Durin, so he could make the Merchants Guild an incredible amount of money. Though,
In retrospect, he was planning to keep the money for himself after betraying all of us. The stash is likely hidden in Durin somewhere. Alfred took a second look at the gold coin, a gleam in his eye. So now we are no longer poor, Grecian continued. Instead, we have an ever-increasing amount of gold, silver, and bronze being infused into the town's economy, with no way to remove it. This is also quite problematic, as it will cause all prices to rise due to inflation created by overspending. I recommend setting a new tax on the dungeon divers to prevent this. Announce this as a temporary tax and use the money to incentivize projects for the town's sake.
I could use the gold for my experiments, Helen announced quickly. My research has really started to pick up speed, but I require funds to continue. If I am successful, I could provide a new type of enchantment that would function against demons.
At Mary's questioning look, Stephen shrugged.
I can't be too sure of her success, he admitted. But if the goal is to lessen financial burden, I see no reason to deny Helen this gold to waste on her research. Every one of her failures would result in destroyed gold.
Helen shot Stevens a glare, but said nothing. Mary frowned.
This will not make the adventurers or miners happy, but I see your point. Helen, I will have someone deliver the gold to you once we begin taxation. And the food shortage?
There is nothing we can do, unless the elves... Grecian looked over at Gran. Gran shook his head.
While we elves could enchant the ground to rapidly produce crops, it would cause irreparable damage to the soil and turn the land into a barren wasteland. That is against our nature as descendants of the Fae.
Prince James slammed his hand on the table, startling everyone. He glared angrily at Gran.
How can you say this? You are condemning my entire people to starvation and internal warfare. Turning a land barren is no problem so long as we survive. We can repair the damage later, after surviving this disaster, yet you sentence us to starve for some tradition? I know you elves can live on the barest of resources, but my people need to eat.
Gran grimaced at James.
I am not playing to some mistaken belief of elven supremacy. Do you have any idea what would happen to my people if we violated our oaths as protectors of nature? We would be cast out and turned into hideous creatures of night. Would you condemn us elves, then, to exist forever as evil monsters?
Mary cleared her throat.
Gran, they do not know or understand. I ask that you clarify this matter so no hard feelings are left behind.
Gran instantly turned apologetic.
Excuse me, Guildmaster. Forgive me, members of the Council, but this is a highly sensitive topic among my people. However, even if we gave your people food, Prince James, the result would only be a temporary fix. While your people may have another month or two, mine would likely end up killing all of you and joining the Empire as monster slaves.
James slowly nodded, but still looked unsatisfied.
Fine, he said. That still leaves us with the problem of food, and I will not condone the consumption of the dead.
We could always try eating a slime, Forcus choked. See if it's tasty.
The room was filled with morbid chuckles.
We'll have to find another way, Mary decided. Now, are there any other issues we need to discuss?
Alfred leaned down and whispered something into Prince James's ear. Prince James looked startled at first, then thoughtful as Alfred continued. When Alfred finished talking, Prince James nodded in agreement.
My prince wishes to pass a motion, Alfred announced with a winning smile. He wishes to address the concerns the townspeople have over the lack of military presence here.
Your prince can talk, yes,
Orso said gruffly.
Let him speak his mind, then. I will second.
Prince James stood. My apologies, Sir Orso. Alfred is my most trusted advisor, and he is the far more elegant speaker when it comes to such matters as these.
As such, I am used to allowing him to speak on these matters. May he continue. Orso snorted.
You don't need my permission, son. I may not be from Durin, but I was just showing some concern over allowing the left arm to speak for the head.
Rest assured, Sir Orso, Alfred said with an unchanging face. I would never betray my prince. As I was saying, my prince wishes to utilize the various officers who survived Durin's attack. I push that we install them as the leaders of the guard so that military order can be established in town. The townspeople would feel a lot safer knowing a trained army was protecting them rather than a group of volunteers.
Mary shook her head. That would not be right. As you say, the guard is mostly made of volunteer adventurers and townspeople who have accepted a reward payment from the guild to patrol and protect the town. Asking them to serve as part of a military effort wouldn't result in many volunteers.
Not asking, conscripting, Alfred corrected her. In desperate times like these, it is important to have clear order and training to combat any threats to the peace. Your system was adequate for the previous peace, but this is war, Guildmaster. Please, for the people.
I agree, Grecian spoke up. A show of military force would certainly calm the people and keep them from being overly fearful. Gran frowned, but said,
I know of a few elf officers. I must put forth they receive the same privileges and authority as their human counterparts. I worry about the rising tensions against my people, especially from the refugees.
The three enchanters had no opinion and waived their right to decide. Orso nodded in agreement as well.
When it comes down to a fight, all you can rely on is your training. I also agree with this motion.
Mary frowned. At this time, the town was under the Adventurer Guild's authority, and most were paid by the organization. What Alfred had put forth was equivalent to removing one of her hands and giving it to the prince's faction. Unfortunately, she could no longer wield her authority with the other factions, now siding with the prince. She had no choice but to concede this fight to James. All right, then. The motion is passed. Now, Mary tried to continue.
Just one more thing, Alfred interjected again. We need to prepare for His Highness's royal ascension ceremony. It is of great importance that we...
Alfred paused as he observed the other representatives' disinterest.
The people would be overjoyed to know they have a true ruler that is willing to guide and protect them. Surely you can all see this.
Grecian waved his hand. The ceremony would have no meaning. It would be fruitless and a waste of time, gold, and security setting it up. The Merchant Guild has no interest. Everyone else was of the same mind. Alfred frowned, but before he could continue, Prince James shook his head.
I appreciate your effort, Alfred, James said, but let's focus on helping the people for now. I'm sure a celebratory coronation would be more welcome than one while we are under siege.
Alfred said nothing, but nodded and withdrew, his face neutral. Mary looked around before banging the table again. All right, this meeting is adjourned. May we live to see the next. She waited until the others were gone before she summoned her assistants, the receptionists.
How did it go?
Allie asked her when the three girls had entered the room. Mary rubbed her forehead. Well, the new Merchant Guildmaster has a better head on his shoulders than his predecessor. It's clear he's also into profit, but at least he possesses a more ethical and moral code in his heart. So long as it's worth his while and for the greater good, he will follow through wholeheartedly. However, the prince's advisor has clearly begun working his way into creating a faction for himself and his lord. That smooth-tongued whisperer successfully stole control of the town guard from our guild.
Bella frowned. So now the prince controls the only real protection force in town, besides the churches? That'll be troublesome.
More so now that they plan on conscripting the men,
Mary pointed out. I doubt they have the means to pay those guards. What has me really worried is that the guard is mostly made up of adventurers. They might use the excuse that all adventurers can be conscripted because many have been working as guards.
Maybe he did it for good reasons?
Carla asked hopefully.
Not everything done is selfish.
Perhaps the prince did so with that in mind. He seems a reasonable sort. From his advisor, he is unlikely the selfless kind. I saw the gleam in his eyes when Grecian mentioned the possibilities of a gold hoard in Durin. Mary dashed Carla's hopes. For better or worse, things have begun to change in this town. I can only hope we survive it all.
Chapter 9. A few days after the drunken shenanigans, Doc found himself humming away as he worked on the dungeon. Due to the recent decrease of adventurers, Doc found himself with more opportunities to work on the smaller, less important parts of the dungeon. For example, he was concentrating on a corner of the fifth floor. He was struggling to decide whether it should be smooth to the touch or sharp.
Which one would be more dungeon? He wondered as he switched the corner back and forth.
While he was concentrating, Claire flew into the heart room, a worried look on her face.
What's up, Claire?
Doc asked cheerfully. Ignoring his greeting, Claire wore a cautious look as she flew around his crystal body, inspecting it.
She muttered. I don't see any signs of corruption. Maybe the evidence is elsewhere.
Claire? Doc sputtered. You're saying some really worrying things right now.
Maybe it's an external influence rather than an internal change,
Claire continued to think out loud.
After all, I haven't seen anything incriminating in my home or the heart room.
Claire! Doc yelled.
Hey, you're really scaring me here. Corruption is a big no-no.
Startled out of her thoughts, Claire blinked and turned her attention to her partner.
Hey, Doc, have you been killing adventurers in town?
Claire asked suddenly. Doc sent her a startled feeling.
What? Why do you ask that? Because every single adventurer who's come in the last few days has been worried about a series of murders in town. They're starting to rise in frequency, and it has all the adventurers on edge. Well, they were already on edge, what with the threat of invasion and all, but now they seem to be borderline paranoid.
That's horrible, Doc exclaimed.
Why can't they die in the dungeon like they're supposed to? I don't get anything if they die out there.
Claire sighed and placed her hand over her face.
Doc, that really isn't the point here. This is serious, as in we are in big-time danger serious. The adventurers think we, the dungeon, are going into town and killing people.
But I'm not. I mean, I have those pixie tunnels in town, but I never use them, and neither do you. I'm not a corrupted dungeon.
Claire sighed in relief. Well, I believe you, Doc. I haven't found any evidence that it was you, but I had to make sure. Still, the problem exists. Murders are happening in town, and we are being blamed for them.
Why? Doc asked.
How can we, mainly me, be blamed for murder? All the victims are missing heads, and their necks were melted in a way that resembles a slime devouring a body. You know, the way all adventurers are used to seeing dead bodies in your dungeon.
But it wasn't me. I didn't do it this time. I mean, it's a cool idea and all.
Doc!
Claire scolded. Sorry, I really get into the whole kill the adventurers mindset sometimes, Doc corrected himself.
What I meant to say is that I wasn't involved this time.
Now, what do you think about this corner?
Papa! The twins called out through the mental link. Have you been killing adventurers in town without us? That's so mean to leave us out.
Doc felt his spirit twitch in agitation.
No, girls, I haven't been slaughtering adventurers in town. Now, can I please get back to my corners?
Lord Master,
Anodyne called out as she squirmed into the room.
I have heard the most wonderful news. You have finally decided to take the battle to the enemy within their borders. Allow me to lead your legions to victory, and I will bring you as many heads as you desire.
I didn't do it, Doc yelled, scaring all four girls. I just wanted to decide whether corners should be rounded or pointed. I don't have time to go out and cause adventurers to want to kill me more than they already do.
A long moment of silence followed Doc's angry rant.
Personally, I think pointed corners are only found on adventurer-made things, Claire reasoned. Rounded corners are more natural and create a more relaxing mood for those who see them.
Oh, really? Doc wondered. I guess that makes some sense.
Another moment of silence followed.
So, no glorious town hunting, my lord? Anodyne finally pressed.
Before Doc could say anything, Rowan's voice echoed through the dungeon mental link.
Excuse me, Doc, but I'm having a hard time moving around town now that you've been killing adventurers here. I know and respect your instincts as a dungeon, but perhaps now isn't the best time.
The girls all winced as Doc's crystal began to vibrate and shudder in anger, somehow gaining a faint red aura. Finally, Doc screamed out in frustration.
Claire, he bellowed, you work with Rowan to find out who's been murdering my adventurers and blaming it on me. I won't be killed or blamed over something I didn't do. Find them.
Fiora stared into the distance using her spyglass.
Fire, she ordered calmly.
To her right, an elf released the arrow knotted in his bow. After a few seconds, the imp scout flying in the distance gave a short scream and died, disintegrating back to whatever infernal realm it had been summoned from.
Good shot. Return to your post and keep an eye out for more of them.
The elf bowed and left. When she heard someone approaching, she turned her attention to the stairs. Upon seeing Leo, Fiora bowed her head in respect.
'Tis late for the second in command of the Rangers to be coming here, she observed. How may I help you, Commander Leopold?
Leo shook his head.
Please, call me Leo. I'm quite indebted to you for leading the rescue party that saved us refugees. Not only that, but you are my good friend Gran's party leader. Let us converse more casually.
As you wish, Sir Leo, Fiora responded. I am glad to speak with you. While Gran doesn't often talk of those of his race, tales of your exploits have reached my ear on occasion. Did you really once ride a griffin?
Leo chuckled.
That was a long time ago, back when I was a more reckless officer in the Elven Kingdom. Unlike these southern lands, the more mountainous surroundings there are full of stronger, more dangerous beasts. I personally view riding a griffin as a minor achievement, though I am one of the few to actually live to talk about it.
Perhaps one day I, too, will see great beasts. Truly, the dungeon here is the most dangerous place I've seen as an adventurer. But I have digressed terribly. Can I help you?
Perhaps you can, Fiora. I am here to study the town's defenses.
Leo joined her watch over the distant plains, the sun setting behind them.
Have you heard about the decision made during the council meeting this morning?
A little. If I understand it correctly, then the city guards have been placed under the direct control of the remains of the Durin army.
It is a little more than that, I'm afraid. Prince James successfully persuaded the other members of the town council into authorizing the surviving army officers to not only take charge of the city guard, but to also conscript all adventurers into the army. Accordingly, I am making myself better acquainted with the people and places here in town.
Fiora moved her head, but failed to hide the frown on her face.
I see, she said tersely. So, we adventurers are to be treated as army conscripts. This will not be taken well.
Yes, I believe so too, which is why I've come to you. There is a meeting happening in an hour or so over what to do next. I was hoping you would accept my invitation to join this officer meeting, so we could have your input and support. Many in this town respect you like I do.
Fiora muttered as she looked toward the sunset.
Does this displease you?
Leo asked her, concerned. A little. I've never been a fan of hero worship, for I believe it limits the mind and makes one blind to the faults of their so-called heroes. Seeing others looking up to me makes me uncomfortable, especially those who would use me. Leo gave her a measured look.
While I am trying to solicit your help, I would never think to use you. Elves have never relied on the human philosophy that each person is a piece to be used and discarded.
Fiora snorted.
Right, we humans sure are good at that. That honestly sounds like James and Alfred in a nutshell.
Leo gave Fiora a penetrating look.
You don't like the prince.
Fiora grimaced.
I have a history with him, back to when I was a child. Honestly, beyond that old grudge, I have yet to see anything wrong with his character. He knows how to lead, and he knows what is at stake. My main displeasure with him arises over the character of his advisors.
Ah, Leo nodded in understanding. Yes, Alfred rubs me the wrong way as well. Even his assistants give me a sense of worry. Interestingly enough, I heard Alfred was the one who spearheaded the negotiations on this matter. It was, and still is, a good idea to consolidate our forces, but the timing still seems suspicious to me. Anyway, from what I've heard, James's other advisors have finished recovering from their injuries while fleeing Durin, and will be joining the prince's entourage from now on.
Fiora closed her eyes as the images of two figures flashed through her mind. The little girl with the curious smile, Annabelle, and the small, timid boy, Josh, winked at Fiora from her memories. Her fists clenched involuntarily.
I do not trust their collective ambitions, but I will not cause trouble on mere suspicion, Leo continued. Please know, however, that I and my people are behind your master completely. I believe that my captain, Prince Ken, is also on your side.
We are all going through this together. There is no need for sides.
Fiora was interrupted by a scream from below. The two warriors acted swiftly and leapt over the edge of the wall, rolling upon landing. They raced around a corner toward the sound of the screaming. There, they found a crowd forming, split between elves and humans. The elves were gathered around a fallen male elf who was bleeding from the temple. A bloody stone lay on the ground nearby, and humans were yelling at the elves in anger.
Give us food! You cursed elves! How dare you hold back when we took you in?
Is this how you treat your benefactors? You owe us!
We know you're holding back. Use your blasted magic!
Hey, break it up!
Fiora roared, igniting her sword menacingly. The men backed off under the threat of the flame, but continued to glower at the elves. From the crowd of elves, a girl elf broke through and ran to the injured elf. She grasped his hand desperately and cried. Leo reached down and helped the elf up to his feet. He and the girl had to support the male elf because his leg was injured. With a nod, Leo gave the injured elf to another, watching as the elf was taken away for treatment.
What is this mess? Fiora growled. Why are you all assaulting an elf?
We know their secret,
one of the men called out.
The elves are holding back food when they know we are running out. They are selfishly hoarding grain and fruit within their quarter, even after we gave them sanctuary. They're thieves.
Fiora raised an eyebrow. Somehow, this group of men had learned of the elves' ability to grow food, though it appeared their information was incomplete. Fiora noticed that more and more curious townsfolk and elves were joining the crowd, and tensions were rising.
The elves have graciously turned over all their food to the town and have devoted their magic to this last harvest season, Fiora announced over the murmurings of the people both human and elf.
There is no thievery, and there is no crime being committed here except that of hate and prejudice.
Elf lover, a man spat at her. You side against your own kind.
Fiora didn't hesitate as she threw her sword through the man's chest. Gurgling, the dying man looked on in shock as he slumped to the ground and died.
People began to scream.
"Everyone, be quiet and listen,"
Fiora roared. She increased the size of her fireball to punctuate her order. The crowd obediently shut up and listened. Fiora pointed at the dead man.
"Remember, our enemies use horrible demonic magic to try to control our hearts and minds.